I'm Richard Evans from EMC Arts, and this is the Arts Forward podcast, where a guest or two joins me to explore the challenges facing the arts sector right now, to do things differently, to do things they've never done before. In this monthly podcast, we look at stories of experimentation and success from innovative arts organisations around the country, and talk to leaders and organisers who are developing new programmes, capacities and know-how in order to lead productive change in response to unprecedented challenges. Here with me to discuss innovative projects that turn risk capital into new revenue is Ryan Fleur, CEO of the Memphis Symphony Orchestra, and Kelly Pollock, Executive Director of the Centre of Creative Arts, or COCA, in St. Louis. They join me from studios in Memphis and St. Louis. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to talk with you both. I got to know Kelly's work at COCA when they were part of our Innovation Lab for the Performing Arts. Kelly, the project you were working on is called COCA Biz. Can you give us a sense of why you decided to pursue this initiative? What was the need or opportunity that you were responding to?
Well, we're an arts education organization, so we've spent the past two decades working with people from all different ages, all different skill levels, bringing them different art disciplines and moving them through kind of a continuum of learning. We'd actually started working with the business community out of our development office, really strategizing keynote speakers and luncheons that we could engage them with creative, innovative thought leaders. We really started to explore what could we do at this intersection of art and business, and started to move it from a development opportunity to more of a program opportunity. Mm-hmm. And as we were facing tough times, thought, you know, is there a way to apply what we know, take our core assets, flip them in a different way so that we could actually generate revenue and use an arts-based approach to train business leaders?
So how did you take those broader goals and turn them into a strategy for action?
Well, we spent quite a bit of time focusing on our mission, our core values, our core assets. We wanted to make sure that the program made sense for our organization. We actually learned quite a bit from our arts integration work that we do in the schools and thought, what if we could use that same model and partner artists with organizational development specialists instead of classroom teachers to use the arts as a way to teach other competencies in business, such as communication, leadership development, team innovation. So when we started exploring this, and really the work that we did with EMC Arts, the Innovation Lab, was instrumental in bringing a team together of artists and business leaders that could really co-create and have this program add value to both our organization and the clients that we wanted to serve.
Help me to understand what types of workshop, leadership development workshops that you actually created, and how did you test them out?
We've been focusing on a variety of different topics, such as team innovation. Reimagine How Teams Innovate was one program that we developed through the Innovation Lab process. We have another one that focused on people management, how we take the concepts of leading and following and performance, use arts-based tools and techniques, and apply that in a business setting. So we came back from that journey to a series of programs that we wanted to pilot. We called upon our business network, many of our companies that our board members represented, and asked people to come to these sessions, and they were multidisciplinary in nature, so we approached the work from visual arts, from movement or dance, as well as theater. And we had hands-on learning where the artist was in the classroom. It's experiential. They're up doing. And then had an organizational development facilitator really map that learning back and apply it to their business day. So we've been then focusing on skills such as communication, critique, building adaptive capacity, creativity within the workforce.
Now, of course, COCA has always been based on arts learning. How would you say this new approach was really different from what you were doing before, both in terms of working with your own teaching artists and with the business community?
Well, I think first and foremost, we really had to flip the way we approached it. We weren't coming at this from a nonprofit approach where we had a product to deliver. We were trying to use the arts as it was really secondary in the sales process. We wanted to talk to business leaders about how we could help impact their companies in positive ways and deliver real meaningful results for their company. So we're talking to them about the value we can add And we don't always lead with the arts. We're an arts institution. And so for 24 years, we've been leading with the arts for those who want to experience the arts. But we're this time coming out, trying to meet their demand. Arts is the way we're doing it. But it's really the languaging has been quite an adjustment for us to think about the approach and really meeting them where they are and applying the arts to do that.
And the business community and managers in businesses in St. Louis were clearly fundamental to the creation of the program, but essential to its delivery. How did you reach out and engage the local business community for those initial pilot workshops? And have your engagement strategies evolved since then?
We've really focused on our own network to start with, that we have a very strong corporate partnership here in St. Louis. And we really relied first and foremost on those companies that have come to know through the COCA through the years, really recognized our brand and the quality. And they sent a variety of different people from their companies that weren't necessarily knowing what they were getting into. We had a lot of skeptics coming in. And actually, it's as a result of that that we've actually had the biggest impact, because when we had people coming in as true skeptics and walk away believers in what the arts could do to tap into parts of thinking that they've never explored, they happen to have been our best cheerleaders going forward.
And we'll come back in a moment, Kelly, to look at the implications of that and where you're going now. You're moving forward with the program on a larger scale. But let me turn first to Ryan. Ryan, we asked you here to talk about the changes happening at the Memphis Symphony Orchestra as a result of the Leading from Every Chair program, which was developed through the 2007 New Strategies Lab for Orchestras. Tell us a bit about that pilot program. What shift in the Memphis Symphony's mission and thinking led you to pursue partnerships within the business community? What were you responding to?
Sure. Well, you know, Richard, first, you're listening to Kelly speak about COCA. There are a number of things that uncannily resonated with sort of lessons that we've learned through this journey. Actually, a lot of it came out of the Innovations Lab, but the notion of authenticity, mm-hmm. and not necessarily leading with the arts and meeting community demand or corporate demand as opposed to our own needs,
right.
And meeting people where they are. Yeah, it's all of that, taking a step back, came from this deep need that we felt and knew as an organization that we were delivering orchestral music, reaching, 1% of the population? And we asked ourselves this question of, well, if we went out of business, what would happen? And people, you know, we said, would anyone notice? Would anyone care? And we really, we didn't like the answer. So it started this organizational shift towards service and relevance. And the lab was a wonderful catalyst. It brought our musicians, board, staff, and some potential community partners together. And we thought we went into the program thinking we were going to build a deep partnership with, for us, it was with FedEx, who had brought a senior executive in the room with us. And we ended up creating this program, Leading from Every Chair, but what the journey for us has been about is it was a different organizational approach. How do we listen as an organization? How do we communicate? How do we respond to our community's needs? And art is the medium, and this notion of artistic excellence is the heart of what we do. But all of a sudden it shifted, and the light bulb went off during developing this Leading from Every Chair program, where the art wasn't the end point. It wasn't about working towards this great moment of art. It was about creating this art in a great way, and then for whom and what and why. And our organization has become about those things. So in our attempt to meet this need of service and relevance, I mean, we did. We sat down and we learned how to listen as an organization, and we sat down with FedEx and we listened to what are your needs, not just as an organization, but what are the challenges that you see as a business. And they came back and they said, well, we ultimately have two challenges. I mean, we do have the challenge of recruiting the best people to come move to Memphis, but we are able to overcome those challenges. We have a deeper challenge of how do we retain those people, right, once we're here. Mm-hmm. And their strategy, their retention strategy, is built around some of the extracurricular offerings that they identify. They have a program they call their Purple Pipeline, which identifies high potential leaders and it invests in them. And they found that their curriculum, frankly, was lacking. And so we sat down together with them, about six or seven of our musicians, and they meaning the HR department over at FedEx, and developed basically a full-day curriculum that used this arts integration approach we focused very similar to COCA on collaboration, teamwork, creativity, and how can you utilize an orchestra to be able to highlight those things.
And then you put together this team. Like Kelly was saying about COCA, this was also an unusual team for you, not only because FedEx was part of it, but because the musicians played a big role. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, we rely on our musicians, our artists to, you know, make the art. And over time, you know, this group of artists have kind of, in their own way, have been segregated to a part of the organization where their feedback isn't really sought, or we don't tap into their brains. And what we've learned is there's so much creative potential. So bringing them to the table and getting us to a state of organizational belief that some of these creative ideas are really valid and there's a venue to be able to focus it has been incredibly powerful.
So help us to understand what kinds of workshops the musicians and FedEx and you all working together actually developed, and how did you move them forward and make them available to the corporate community?
You know, we created different components where first there was very much aesthetic education component where these executives are put in the room and they're given 40 minutes to write a piece of music, and they're given ORF instruments that a three-year-old can play. And the only guidance that they're given is they're a musician is provided in the room, not told what questions to answer or ask, but just tapping into that innate creativity, and it's amazing some of the results that are seen. The highlight of the day, where everything builds up after immersing these corporate leaders into how the orchestra works and how we interact and communicate with each other, and then going through this exercise, we then actually put them on stage side by side in the orchestra, and we work through each time it's a various piece of music. Right now we're working through a movement of a Beethoven symphony, but to highlight how we, you know, communicate non-verbally, or how we work through issues of balance and intonation and ensemble. And it's absolutely amazing every time we've done this to watch the light bulbs click off and have people start with just very minimal facilitation, how they can connect the synapses in terms of their own work environment and their own challenges. And then taking all that and obviously going through the right debrief to capture that learning.
And since you started with that initial pilot program, Ryan, you've actually broadened the scope of the initiative beyond engaging with local business leaders alone to actually engaging your musicians with all kinds of communities. Tell me a bit about that.
A couple of things. First, we've adapted this program, Leading from Every Chair. We've started applying it to high school classes and teams, and that's been productive. And but the main thing that's happened is this, the approach that we've gone through, this notion of listening and meeting people's needs and having a program that's been musician designed. We kind of opened the floodgates and said, okay, what if we do anything that you want as a musician that meets three criteria, that is artistically meaningful to you, fulfilling as an artist? Second, that meets a definable community need, emphasis on community. And then third, that ultimately we can tie it to a revenue source. And from there, besides Leading from Every Chair, there are another 20 programs that our musicians have that have developed, and essentially we've created this whole R&D wing at the symphony, a number of which have truly generated meaningful revenue, whether it's mentoring in a charter school to doing some of the more traditional ensembles, a couple of our musicians have gone out and have been trained as music therapists to lead drum circle therapy, and they do that in a number of facilities. The creative possibilities are endless, but it's the exact identical approach that led us to develop Leading from Every Chair.
And Ryan, you speak about those three criteria, and of course one of them is revenue. So let's move on and ask both of you about the finances and the resources for this kind of program. Kelly, I'm wondering with COCA what you did to get this program running, COCA Biz, and where the resources came from.
Sure. We knew this was going to be a challenge to get a program like this off the ground, and we knew it was going to take resources above and beyond what we had. Our board was very clear in discussions about this potential program that we didn't want to take resources from any other program stream at COCA to make this happen. So there was a small team of committed community members, board members, who believed so strongly in the cause that they committed to work with us to go out and seek resources above and beyond what we would normally get in contributed revenue. So we developed a three-year plan. We knew that the resources in terms of generating revenue weren't going to come instantly, and so we wanted to give ourselves the time to make that happen and the resources we knew it was going to take to invest in the program before it took off. We initially had, in our first year that we went live with it in a bigger way, which was last year, we had about $160,000 that we had from angel investors, from different resources that weren't initially coming into the organization, but we found new ones, people that believed in this concept. And that was really critical to get it off the ground. So we have a three-year plan to kind of wean ourselves down a little bit less each year. I think this year we have about $100,000 in contributed revenue to support it, with the hopes that after 3 years of this, the program will be fully supporting itself, self-sustaining, as well as feeding back to the organization overall in a more significant way.
You were able to find investors who had not previously been supporting COCA. This was not a question of substituting one support for another?
No, absolutely. We had actually the largest contribution came from a very young entrepreneurial technology-based company, really had zero information about COCA or interest in its core programs. But as a young startup, they really understood the concept of angel investors to get an idea off the ground. And they explored that with us. They also believed firmly in this idea of innovation and approaching things differently. So we've had some of our best supporters come from brand new companies to the organization that, you know, it's one of the offshoots of this that we didn't initially anticipate, but it's really broadened the audience that we can talk to about the arts. And as Ryan was saying, really make it relevant to them in their worlds. And when we can do that, we've actually, I think, generated quite a bit of support for the arts. You know, people who aren't naturally inclined to understand the arts from their worlds, when we've been able to connect these dots, we found a whole new audience and pipeline for prospects for giving to the organization.
And you didn't, or did you, face a perception that somehow this new program was sort of secondary to your core mission? Did people see the link?
You know, we had to make a case for it. I think that the process really helped us, that we were very intentional throughout the process to make sure that it met our mission, that this wasn't just a side business to generate revenue that was unrelated to our core brand, but in fact that it came straight from our authenticity delivering arts education, just as we do in the studios at COCA or in the classrooms and in school systems, and we're seeing that play out.
And I'm wondering in Memphis, Ryan, whether you found similar kinds of new resources coming to the table. What did you have to invest yourselves into Leading from Every Chair and the other programs? And where did the resources come from?
With us, you know, we don't have physical structure. It's all artists. It's musician time.
Yes.
And we Leading from Every Chair and actually another project we had started at the time became the catalyst for putting a really creative mechanism in our union contract where they can, if they opt in, it pretty much frees them to do whatever they'd like outside of the traditional work rules as long as it meets that criteria. And to pay for that, we had a little bit of local funding. We've had the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation has actually been a very generous partner with us to help guarantee that cost. Now, having said that, on the revenue side, while Leading from Every Chair itself, I mean, it does generate revenue for us each year, it's not actually as much as we had thought. I mean, it is an earned, it's a saleable product. However, if you look at all the revenue earned and contributed that comes in over the scope of these 20 programs, all of which are new over the last 4 years, it's approaching 10% of our total revenue each year, which is a huge amount for an orchestra that has almost a $5 million budget.
Mm-hmm. And when you started, Ryan, and now you can see some positive results, but was it perceived as the investment perceived really as a big risk? How did you rationalize spending resources on an innovative project to your staff, your board, your funders? How did you get them on board?
Well, as we were thinking about launching this, you know, the economy completely tanked, and we were forced to make some very difficult decisions and concessions and cuts across our organization, where we had to scale back probably about 30% for that back in 2009. And rather than simply cut across the board, we said, "This, how can we do this in a way that where we, when we emerge as a different organization?" And that, you know, it was a unique set of alignment. But to say that, you know, we it was survivability and fear were part of the factors. But we did have, thanks to this work, this initial work we had done, there was a sort of a positive direction to focus people's energies during that time.
What strategies have been most effective in bringing in new money, Kelly, from your point of view?
Well, we knew in this initial year that we really got the program off the ground that it was going to be an investment year. So we knew the net this first year was not going to, that we couldn't measure success by the net. We did a lot to develop business, to just get the word out there, build the network. We took a risk, a rather large risk, I would say, to develop and implement a two-day business creativity conference as part of this program, where we had innovative thought speakers from around the country, as well as our CocoBiz programs, in an immersive two-day experience for business leaders. We were very intentional about getting the right people to show up for these 2 days, and we were able to get about 30 different businesses and key partners from around the community to show up, some on a complimentary basis, some discounted, some paying in a combination. But that initial work has led to a much stronger, we're only into our third month of our new fiscal year, and we've already seen our revenues this year surpass all of last year. So we think that these strategies are paying off, and we're still optimistic that on our three-year plan to really make sure that this program is growing and feeding back to COCA, that we think we're on track.
Does this remain entirely a standalone program, or are you finding you can also include in those budgets some of your sort of general overhead or your facilities costs that makes this much more integral to COCA?
Absolutely. We started that from the very beginning. So even last year, where we weren't seeing positive net contributions, it was with a fully loaded budget, so to speak. So we had Yes. our facilities costs, our overhead, some salaries allocated to this program. So when you look at that, without a net, we're still helping the organization overall, bringing in contributed revenue that we might not otherwise see, and picking up the volume and pace of our earned revenue. So, yes, we do see that balance shifting, but at the same time, we've now integrated this program as part of the organization overall, that it really has become core pretty quickly to how we talk to people, how we explore it, and we really see it. It's developed a full ecosystem of arts education programs that we have, you know, be it from infant to teens to senior adults to the business community to school systems. We have a full range of programs, and it's was really the missing link, so to speak, that we had in our programs. And I now think that it's quite core to how we work and think.
And Ryan, you were saying that this is now potentially 10% of the symphony orchestra's income, and it sounds like a lot of time from your musicians. Do you see this becoming part of the core, or is it still regarded as a sort of separate extra?
I'd see it as absolutely becoming part of the core. I mean, our vision is that within a period of time, let's just say within 5 years, that every activity that the Memphis Symphony takes on is an engagement activity. And now we're actually attempting to incorporate some of this work and sharing some of it through our main stage concert series.
And it seems for both of you as though these new directions that you've created have engaged you or involved you in working with your artists in new ways and unlocking new ways for your artists to work and relate to the community.
It's provided a real meaningful line of work for them. I think that they're excited by the challenge, and it definitely requires a set of professional development tools that we've been developing as we went along, because there are a certain set of skills and knowledge and dialogue that you need to be prepared to have when you're working with the business community that are quite different than working with, you know, say, dance students in the classroom setting. But I think it's an exciting opportunity for them to see their work play out in new audiences. Clearly for them, it's additional work, meaning additional revenue for them as artists, which is always great. And I think they've really been energized by that process of engaging. And I think we really are seeing the benefits of arts intersecting with business and what we can learn from each other in the process.
Kelly Pollock is executive director of COCA in St. Louis, and Ryan Fleur is the CEO of the Memphis Symphony Orchestra. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
That was fun.
Thanks for listening. This is the monthly Arts Forward podcast. You can check out more on our newly launched website that features multimedia profiles of innovative organizations, a blog, this podcast series, and much more at www.artsforward.org. That's artsfwd.org. I'm Richard Evans of EMC Arts in New York.